Hi, this is Melissa Wood Tepperberg, and this is the Move with Heart podcast.
Are you ready?
Just breathe it all in.
I want to talk. I can't lie.
I was like, it's going to be short, sweet, and very spicy.
And we're going to get right into it because apparently some of you think I talk too much.
This was Ronnie Kobo's first time ever on a podcast, and I'm so honored that she sat down with me and felt really comfortable just sharing more about how Ronnie Kobo came to life so many years ago, the evolution of the brand, and really how she takes her upscale versatility, her timeless silhouettes, her incredible collections, and makes women feel confident. She has been supporting me and been a cheerleader in my life since the moment we said hello, since we met. And I'm really honored to sit down with Ronnie today to have her share something about her life and something she was diagnosed with and really went through it very privately for the first time ever. She not only has the most exquisite sense of style, she is truly one of the most gracious people I've ever met. And I think you will get that from listening to her story.
It's hard being cool, though.
Sit
like,
up
it's like
and
a
then
responsibility.
Melt.
It's like, cool. No. Like, it is. It's a cool responsibility. It's like,
no, there's a lot of pressure.
What is the cool person going to say? Like, it's not. I don't mean to be cool.
No, yeah. But it's, you're actually 100% right there.
It's like, no, it's okay. Like, it's just like, I don't know when they put me in the cool thing, you know, like me and my brother, the like childhood versions of us would be giggling and cracking up because we were like foreigners growing up in different countries together, 3 years apart, slightly awkward. And now we're both really cool. I don't know what that means.
That means you're cool.
I don't know. We're both pretty cool. I mean,
You're
cool, and you were always cool, and it's nice to see how you have built this incredible business. I'm very proud of you. I'm very proud of Noah. I'm very proud of your children and just knowing lovely people like you.
I love you.
I love you too. Thank you so much for having me here. My first podcast, and I'm really happy that it's with a friend and someone I care about and believe in and love, and I feel in a safe space, and I think it's super important to be surrounded in safe spaces with people that encourage you, that you can encourage, people that love you and care about you, and kind of like a muscle of support and love. Not long ago, you told me, if they're not supporting me, I'm not supporting them, remember?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, first of all, thank you, because everything you just said is the friend you have been to me from like the moment we met. And I have such a vivid memory of that. Do you remember it was in Lavo nightclub in New York? And Noah brought me over and he was like it was the first time we had ever really talked in depth.
Like I remembered you from Marquee.
But like we didn't really hang out.
But I liked your energy. You were always like cheerful and fun and you danced and you worked and you were like, you had a nice energy. And like, I remember that about you. You were kind. You were like a girl's girl. I always had a nice vibe. So when then I saw you at Lavo and you were finally like Noah's girlfriend, what happened? I don't remember.
That's okay. It was a long time ago. You came up to me and you were like, it's so nice to finally like talk to you because I knew you too, but we had never really like sat there and talked. I mean, when you have a conversation at Marquee, you both think you're saying different things. Like you don't really have heartfelt conversations at Marquee. Although we were at Lavo, but it was like—
We were in our 20s.
It was early. We were in our 20s and it was earlier in the night. So the music wasn't full blown. But you like did this thing. And I remember you like, you do this to this day. You like crossed your arms and you like pulled back and you were like, you're going to do something really great. You're like, there's something about you. And I just remember being like, oh, thank you. Like, I almost like didn't even know how to take it. I think I was just so different and a little insecure and kind of like,
I don't know. I had been wearing your clothes. Let's also just mention that. I'd been a fan of your brand. You were so genuine with me. And truly, like, that has just maintained. Like, you've been this truly supportive. And I'd love to talk to you about this because I think you and I have had this conversation many times over. There are people in your life who really support you. And then there are people in your life who will support you from the surface because of how it looks, but they're not really your people. And you've always been just like one of my people, one of my true supporters.
I am. I'm definitely one of your people and I love it. I love what you've grown into. I've loved watching it. Do you feel like you've done something amazing with your life?
I do.
I like that. Makes me happy. But I also think it's like a mirror. Like, you see beauty in others and then they see beauty in you. And then you see beauty in them again. And then they see more beauty in you. And I feel like it's an exchange, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I do. I mean, you've done the same for me as well. You've supported me in the same way. You've believed in me. And it's really nice to see what we've made of our lives here in New York City. It really is. It's lovely to see that. Sorry, you go.
No, you. So you,
well, we have a whole thing going on in the office. I have to say, people are like, who is going to talk more, Melissa or Ronnie? Because you both talk so much. And I said, like, I don't know. It depends on what topic. And we do both talk so much. And I'm thinking of our dinners together. We're always like screaming and talking over each other. And we love it. And usually like a third person with us. But we always share such a great banter. So it was a kind of a joke in the office who would talk more.
I love that. That's so good. And we also have like, we have an entourage of people watching us too.
But they're not here. What happened to them?
No, it's fine. They go behind, you know, it's just like, I want you to feel like we're in this little space together. One thing having a podcast has helped me to become is a better listener. And I realize even in like the beginning of the podcast, how it's almost uncomfortable sometimes to just sit and listen and feel like there always has to be this act and almost as like, the host, or I don't even like to think of that. I really just like we're sitting here having a conversation, but it's really helped me to just observe that from listening to it, because that's also uncomfortable listening to yourself or watching yourself on camera.
You have a lot to say, and I think you actually promote a lot of positive things. You know, you really promote a lot of self-love, self-care, movement. I think that's your first stage. And I think there's a lot more for you. I think you're just at the beginning. I think you know that. And I recognize that in you from the minute I saw you. I thought, like, what a great human. That's what I thought. And then watching you grow over the pandemic was really, really lovely. It was a really lovely period just to see all the things come together. And you show up in a very professional way. And I have to say, I really admire that. Because someone like me who's gone to, like, NYU graduate and undergraduate, and I've studied all this and like thought I was prepared for a certain kind of career. And then I see someone like you who just like seamlessly just fell into the shoes and showed up and taught herself everything. Really, really, I admire you in that. You really deserve it. It belongs to you. And I feel like a lot of successes belong to the people that have worked for it. And I don't think that you have not worked hard. You really showed up and worked your butt off to be where you are today. And it's really wonderful to see what you have created, a real brand around the things you believe in that are very authentic to you. And people ask me all the time, like, what is Melissa like? And I said, really, honestly, that's exactly what she's like. There's no act. She's always laughing. There's a loud laugh. She's a Sagittarius. It's very common among Sagittariuses to laugh like this. Yeah, this is exactly how she is when there's no cameras. She does find joy in the simplest things, like making a green juice. It's really something she enjoys to do. She's not embarrassed to say when she's not feeling herself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which has been something that I think you've been sharing with other women. And I see it resonating in your, I don't want to say fan, you know, because they're not fans. These people are part of your journey and they're very much part of your method of like meditation, movement, wellness, self-care. And now you're showing another vulnerability of yourself and it's listening, which is new, right?
Oh,
saying
yeah.
It's really new. it's nice to hear you say that because I'm in the same place too. So should we just like listen to each other and not talk? Because I actually am, I'm in a listening phase right now too.
That's
feeling
good.
Like I don't know everything. And I think that people who are listening are learning more. I'm there too.
Well, we can be here together. I mean, honestly, it's beautiful. It's been expanding me in different directions to just be so present. And it like locks you into what you're doing. So it's a good thing. I want to go, I think, back to younger Ronnie Kobo. You grew up in New York. And just like seeing the evolution of Ronnie Kobo and you, like knowing you now and even 14 years ago when I met you, like just everything has evolved and elevated. I'm wearing your blazer now. That is so insane.
Thank you. I'm really proud of that blazer because like I was scared of making a really good blazer because I have like very high expectations from myself, my team, my vision, and like I really needed to nail the blazer. Seeing it on you, it looks awesome.
You nailed it.
I think I did.
You did. Nailed it.
It's a good tux.
And you're just like, you have always been my style icon. Like, I feel like you just get it. So where did that come from?
Where did it come from? I don't want to sound like we've been hearing a lot of empowering females. What does it mean? I really, truly have a brand that I feel like when you wear it, you feel empowered. You feel individual. I feel like I give that the Ronnie Kobo girl when she wears something. She's kind of competing on her own with no one. She's feeling individual. Mm. She's feeling confident. She's feeling sexy. She's feeling bold. And it's kind of a conversational piece. Whatever I make, I feel like ends up being a conversational piece. So it started with, what was the question again? How did it start?
Yeah, I mean, you grew up in New York.
I grew up in Hong Kong. A lot of people don't know that about me. My father was one of the early pioneers of the denim industry. And he was one of the very brave foreigners who embarked on the journey of an American dream. So we lived between New York and Hong Kong. And we went to school in Hong Kong. And I kind of grew up going to work with my dad in factories on weekends. He had a work ethic like me. So he worked late at night and on weekends and traveled around the world. Like it was having breakfast in a coffee shop. And how I started making things was I lived in Hong Kong and we went to Cotillion classes. Mm-hmm. I grew up going to an American school, which is why I have an American accent. My sister had a British accent, which was really cute. And my brother had like an international accent, still does. Sometimes he speaks British and sometimes he's very American. And it just depends on who he's talking to. I was always a chameleon. So I had like loved the Protestant school we went to and learned a lot of like very traditional middle American values, all American values. And that's why I really identified with the American culture. So when I moved to the States, it was like seamless transition.
How old were you?
I was 16 when I moved to the States.
So
15.
So you grew up entirely in Hong Kong?
Yes. I mean, we tried. There was a year in the first grade and a year in the fourth grade where we tried to move to the States. But my father really kept on going back to Hong Kong.
And okay.
I grew up in a place where product was everything. Mm-hmm. My father was rumored to have invented stretch denim. And I think it's changed a lot. And mm-hmm. it goes into trends. And right now, it's a lot about marketing the product. We are buying a lot of similar products these days, and they're just marketed a different way. And marketing is actually a fascinating part of what I consider packaging. Mm. And it's not just making great product, sadly. There's also marketing great product. And marketing has a truth serum to it because there's something that media does. It's sort of like a truth serum. You can really spot something that's not authentic, mm-hmm. especially in your field. I'm sure you can spot things that are not authentic in the wellness field. Mm-hmm. And whether or not you are critical of them or not, or, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure you can spot something that's not authentic. Same with designers. We can spot each other. We can spot each other's strengths. Marketing is so important because it gives the message of what you're trying to say. So it's beyond the product. Culture is so important these days. culture, meaning. We're in a place in the world where we really want to create meaning with what brands we support and why, and sustainability, which I have not yet embarked on the way that I would have liked to. So I'd make dresses for cotillion class, and I had girls who I would make dresses for. And I almost enjoyed making dresses for them more than myself because I loved making people feel good. And I think that's how it all started. It just gave me a little high to look at a female and like make her feel good and like be part of that experience.
Mm.
I loved it.
That's who you still are to this day.
Yes, that's who I still am. And I was listening to you talk about like who we've evolved to, but I'm always scaling back and trying to go back to who I've always been in my heart, because that person, that girl, always leads me in the right places. And I feel like we grow up, we're exposed to so much, we learn and we grow, but there's something that can never, ever leave you, and it's just who you are and why you're there.
100%.
So I'm genuinely not like embarrassed to say I love making people feel great. It's like my role in my family. It's my role with my friends. Like, I'm a giver. I love making people feel great. It makes me happy. It's just something that I love doing. And it started in clothing. And then it became theatrical at times. And it became emotional. And it became an experience just to see the process of making things.
Mm-hmm.
It's really exciting. It really, really is. Especially now, we're a week before Fashion Week. And slowly, I'm seeing my designs trickling in. And I'm getting into the mood. And it's a very inspiring high.
I mean, just watching you create something, like coming to your office years ago. I guess it was last year for my 40th when you like did my birthday dress, and just like watching how you are when you're in your essence. It's so powerful to see like what comes to life, because I think that's probably like one of my biggest questions when it comes to fashion and designing. Like, you have to design so much so far in advance. Like, you probably already have the holiday done.
Well, I'm always late. No, I don't have a holiday. And I just got a lecture from my team about being late with that.
Oh.
Holiday starts next week.
Okay.
And it's my favorite.
It is.
I think like pretty much nail holiday, because it's just one big happy party, and it's celebrations, and it's feeling great, and it's feeling empowered, and it's feeling sexy, and it's feeling conversational, and it's celebratory, which I love a celebration.
Mm-hmm.
I love a celebration.
You're so good at the celebratory. I don't think you've ever created anything that I've been like, nah. Like, I'm just like, everything hits. How do you keep yourself inspired? Do you go to shows? Do you go, like, where do you get the most?
Like, inspiration's everywhere. My first company, I did handbags, and I was inspired by tapestries, and they were so beautiful. And I would buy vintage tapestries and make these beautiful handbags. I have one that I still keep, and I love it. I'll send you a picture if you want to put it in this whole reel, whatever.
Yeah,
you know, this podcast, it's beautiful. And I'm inspired by anything. I'm inspired by life. But lately, I'm inspired a lot by vintage and history. And obviously, I'm known for being inspired by the 80s and 90s, and that's kind of where I grew up in Asia, and it was a very glamorous lifestyle at the time. Everybody dressed up, and it was a melting pot of ethnicities. There was not one culture that you would say was dominant. There was people from all over the world. It was very interesting to see so many people living in such a transit city. Also, people didn't stay very long. So you only had friends for a small window. You had friends for 2 years, 3 years, and then they would move. There were a lot of IBM families, expats. Very few in fashion was in my school, but there was a lot of banking families. It was, you know, the 90s in Hong Kong. So it was everything that you can think of. It was also a British colony at the time. So it was very interesting. There was a handover in 97. And we were already gone by then.
Mm-hmm.
We just left. So it's changed a lot, but it's still just that magical place. If you think New York City's fast-paced, you have not been to Hong Kong.
I've been to Hong Kong once for like 5 days. And I was like, this is insane.
We lived in the countryside.
Okay.
So it was a lot chiller. A lot of my childhood looked like a tropical island because it's a very plush island. Hong Kong is, it rains like 50% of the time. So it was very plush and it was surrounded by water. People don't know that about living in Hong Kong, that like we were always like barefoot on the beach, exploring in like the mountains. One of the things we used to do when we got a little bit older was we would just take a bus that didn't have English writing on it. So you know you were going to like a total foreign kind of community. Not foreign, but you were going to more of like a less, at the time we said Guailo, which is like white community. I was a Guailo, you know, but it was less white and it was more Asian. And we'd go to these like cities that were like mini cities that were just all Asian and there'd be no one that we would know. And we would just misbehave, skateboard and misbehave. And that's my last year in Hong Kong was that, just jumping on Asian buses and going to like communities that were not Caucasian and just being like a teenager, which was super fun.
It's so funny because I know you've talked about Hong Kong before, but I always thought that you were there for a shorter period and then came to New York and like would go back and visit your dad. I didn't realize that was your whole childhood.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was my whole childhood. And it's Chinese New Year around the corner. And I really like, I feel it. It's part of my culture. I love Chinese culture. Mm. So respectful. Chinese people are like incredible people. They're so loyal. Love doing business with Chinese people. I just love it. I love the code. There's a little bit of like a mob wife to me sometimes, or not my wife, or just because I'm really big on loyalty and honesty. And I really get that ethic from the friendships I've made in Asia. Almost all of the factories that I work with are female owned. The majority are. And they're all young, really hungry, really creative, really, really amazing women who make beautiful clothing with me. We do a production also in other countries, but I love China. I love it. I love it.
I remember going to a factory for the first time and I was like, oh, like this is, it's wild when you like actually see how product is created.
Wild. I create product here because I'm such a product junkie. I created on 37th Street and there used to be such an interesting production culture on what they call the garment district. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of factories. Sadly, there's less and less, but I make a lot of things in the garment center. I have a lot of factories that I have great relationships with and we have a lot of very interesting evenings together making product, which is just what I love to do.
It's what you love doing, like aside from just designing.
Right.
It's I mean, who you surround yourself with, right?
I always thought I'd be a writer, like on the side. That was
really?
Like my true passion was to write. And my biggest fear was making denim because I had a lot to live up to. And this is my first season that I'm launching a proper denim line. And I think you're going to love it.
I'm so excited. I love the denim that you've created already.
Thank you.
I just never thought I would see a day where I would wake up and choose matcha over coffee. But that's the thing about Peak. And when people tell me that they don't like the taste of matcha, I'm like, have you ever tried their organic, very important, ceremonial grade matcha? Because it doesn't leave that bitter taste in your mouth. It tastes really good, really smooth, and it gives you this phenomenal lasting boost. That is the reason truly why I choose matcha over coffee now. It doesn't mean I won't have a latte here and there, but in the morning, especially as a woman, it's really important to make sure our systems are balanced. And I was drinking coffee on an empty stomach, which disrupted my hormones. It made me crazy. And it just was severely affecting my moods, which led me to experimenting with matcha. And this sustainable boost that you feel, just like it stays with you throughout the day. I feel less likely to even need a second caffeinated beverage in the afternoon when we all feel that drop because of how supported I feel with my Peak Sun Goddess Matcha. The reason that you feel this sustained level of energy when you drink Peak tea is because the L-theanine that they use, this is a natural component of matcha that offers calm and sustained energy. I could keep going. Literally, this could be the entire episode because I love this brand. And I love their little travel packs that I have in my purse at all times. If I'm traveling or if I'm going somewhere and I want a matcha, this is the matcha of my choice. You can get up to 15% off on Peak's Sun Goddess Matcha, plus a complimentary beaker and rechargeable frother. Frothing really makes a difference. When you shop my link, peaklife.com/MWH. I'm going to spell this out for you guys. It's PIQUELIFE.com/MWH.
It's a big pressure because I come from such a denim family. My dad hasn't been in the business for almost 30 years, maybe even more actually, but he still has it. It's like something that you always have. Like I just flashed him a picture of my first denim the other day, like the real launch. And he called me back so inspired and like sleepless. He needed to talk to me. And he was like, "You're missing a really good logo on the back of the jean." And now we're entering this trend where everything is like less logos, more quiet luxury.
Right.
I'm sure you've been hearing that word a lot.
A lot.
The quiet luxury. What does that mean?
Yeah. You know, what does that mean?
Quiet luxury. You're talking to someone who's such a novelty freak, who really likes to like stand out in a room and likes women to stand out in a room. Mm-hmm. So quiet luxury is definitely not 100% who my personal aesthetic is, although I can appreciate it and its simplicity and its elegance. But it's also so important to be authentic to yourself.
Thank you.
And just say like, you know what? I can appreciate this. And I'm dressed, I guess, in a quiet luxury kind of way today, which is,
you
I guess, it's
like
trendy.
Today?
I guess it's what I felt like doing. I mean, it's what I wore to work today. And honestly, I didn't have time to go back and change. So I made it work.
It's great.
But quiet luxury is good quality. And I think that stems from the marketing that we have. Okay, this is actually good because quiet luxury is quality. And I think that we've done a lot of impulse purchasing on Instagram, on Facebook, online. And I think that the marketing really took over from the product. Mm-hmm. And I think it became too much. We had the pandemic with the sweats and the sweats and the sweats, which I love more than anything. That's something you don't know about me. But I think from the quiet luxury, we needed some real good quality. We didn't just want to like buy into an image. We wanted to buy into quality, longevity, price point, really like be wise with where we're spending our money. And I can totally appreciate quiet luxury, really can. But I can totally be honest with myself and say that's not where I am. I have great quality. Our clothing is great quality and we strive for quality, but I don't think I'm quite a quiet luxury brand and I don't want to be. I'm happy in my space. I'm happy what I've created and I want to create a bigger world from what I know how to do.
I love
that. Not try to be anyone else, you know, because like me is good and me is awesome and someone else is awesome. Quiet luxury brands are awesome. I love them. I personally like to buy quiet luxury for myself mm-hmm. because it lasts longer and because I have such a good eye for clothing and for execution. And I really can appreciate spending my money wisely.
Quality over quantity, I feel like has been such a movement and I'm so happy to see it because even like thinking back to like you said during the pandemic and it was like the sweats and the tie-dye and I would love what you said about even just like maintaining authenticity with self. Like trends are like right now, for instance, with like the mob wives trend and everyone, I'm like, can we all just not look like everybody else? Like, can we have our own sense of self? Like, I enjoy elements of trends and things trending, don't get me wrong. Like, and I am definitely, I enjoy quiet luxury moments, but like when I go out, I don't want to be quiet. I've always
Well, you don't need, it's funny because you don't need much because you're such a beautiful woman and you have such a beautiful energy and you look so beautiful with nothing on your face and nothing on your hair, in your hair and like just natural. But it's nice to see someone who has all those beautiful gifts that can actually like want to dress up and be extra at night. It's fun to watch you. It is. I love that. But you don't need much. And quiet luxury would actually really, really suit you very well. but I also appreciate you supporting smaller brands and being authentic to who you are. You never look like you're trying to look like someone else.
No, I really don't think I am.
And that's really important because we live in New York City and it's so easy to get caught up in what's in fashion and what's trendy. I mean, the New York City girls, they dress like no one else. I mean, they really do. They have the best style. They are so beautiful. They're all super intelligent. Most of them have these fabulous careers. And if they don't have these fabulous careers, they're amazing moms or, you know, they have amazing hobbies or talents and they have great style. And I think a great style comes from intelligence and from authenticity and from a sense of humor, I think, even. I like to not take myself too seriously. And if you know me, you know I'm always laughing and I'm always making jokes. And I think that my clothing is a reflection of that.
It is. I feel like going back to like what you're saying, like to me, it's everything I wear of yours, it just feels like a statement. And I love making a statement with the way that I dress. It's not about necessarily standing out in a room, or it might be sometimes, but I just like it for myself. Like it's not even about other people. Do you know what I mean?
You.
It makes you, like when you were like, what are you wearing? And I'm like, I like to dress for this because it helps me show up. And like, I feel like this is such an important topic for young men and women, I think, entering the workforce. Like, when you get dressed, you feel a certain way and you bring that essence and that energy to walking into that interview. It's not about the brands you're wearing. It is about the confidence within yourself. And clothing has the ability to transform you into feeling powerful.
100%. 100%. I can't tell you how much I agree with that. 100%. That's why I'm in it, I think. There's one of the many reasons why I'm in it. There's also a high. There's a high you get when you're executing something. And there's a high from failing that if you're someone who's not afraid of failing, and I am not afraid of failing. I failed so many times. And it's just like a lesson learned. And, you know, you get up, you pick yourself up and you just achieve, you know. Failing for me is success. Mm. Truly. Every time I fail, I feel like I'm closer to success. My family always jokes around about me not being scared to fail because I failed a lot. I've tried a lot of businesses as a child growing up, and you can look at it as a failure, but I look at it as a portfolio.
Ooh.
Yeah, for me, it's a portfolio of experiences, of lessons, lessons of yourself and lessons of interactions with other people, lessons of even execution. Like if you see what we're executing this season from 10 years ago, it's like, I've really evolved. And
oh, yeah.
That's awesome. It's a great feeling. It shows that I'm not tired, that I have a lot more in me. Mm. And I've always had that kind of fight, whether it's in life. And I know we're talking about the elephant in the room, which I really want to say that I want to talk about the elephant in the room because it's not why you have me here.
No,
I know that. But I know that because I've worked a lot on being great. You know, I wasn't always just like you. Maybe that's how we connect. I wasn't always confident. It was kind of awkward. And then I became overly confident because like I was trying to be confident, you know?
Yes.
And then I like realized I wasn't really confident. And then I realized what confidence is. And like, I have to say, I'm really confident. I really am. I mean, we have insecure moments. We have moments where we're questioning ourselves, but that's not insecurity. Just being humble, you know, just wanting to be better, to grow. So the elephant in the room is interesting because it's around this time. So it's a very triggering time for me in general. It's been 4 years and everyone always asks me, Ronnie, why are your fall collections so great? Because when I'm designing fall, it's around the time that everything happened in my life that really changed the way that I looked at things. And I like to dive into creativity. It's very healing for me just to, I don't want to say be distracted, but like do something positive with overthinking and remembering. Like, I think everyone who's gone through some kind of sadness in their lives or some kind of trauma, I think when they enter that time or that month, I remember I used to have someone very close to me who lost their father in March. They know who they are if they ever see this. And I remember in March, their personalities totally changed. And it was like, even the month leading up to March, because the trauma was so, so strong in their bodies and in their nostalgia that the month of March meant something, maybe the season or the smell in the air or whatever you were eating or somebody's birthday that month, or was it Valentine's Day, or was it whatever it is, really brings you back. So this is the time in my life that my health failed me. And it's really, really funny because next week it's going to be February 4th. I'm sure this is probably going to air not then, but next week is going to be February 4th. And that's when I found out that I was diagnosed with fallopian tube cancer, which is a form of ovarian cancer. There's been studies that say ovarian cancer starts in the fallopian tubes. And my cancer was fallopian tube cancer, which is really rare. I think it's, at the time, it was 5% in the world. And it was really funny because I'm like, of course, like me, like I, if you know me, I'm always in like the weirdest places at the weirdest times. Like I was in the tsunami in the beach in Thailand. I was really close to 9/11, you know, the Twin Towers. I was in a weird airplane situation once. Like I'm in weird places quite often. So of course, I had like one of the most hardcore like cancers you could have. You know, I didn't even imagine in my wildest fears and dreams that that would be something I would have to experience. It was just so profound. I really understood so many different things that I don't want to say we took it for granted. I took, you know, we take our health for granted.
We do.
You don't. One of my team members here, I met on Zoom when I was going through chemo. And I remember like putting a wig on and like putting a hat on and like meeting this young hipster artist. And it was just, I think like 45 minutes after the conversation, I was like, oh, by the way, I just wanted to tell you, like, you know, like I have cancer. It's like, so I would tell the weirdest people at the weirdest times.
You told me at the weirdest, like I still to this day was like,
how did I tell you? It was all a blur.
We were on the phone and you just said it like, I have cancer. And I was like, what? Like, and our conversation was short because I think there was something like that you weren't saying on the phone. And then you text me and you're like, I'm sorry.
By the way, it became for Melissa's career, just like right at the beginning of Melissa's career, because my diagnosis was February 4th, 2020. So it was a month before the pandemic.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So the world changed and everybody's lives were different. Melissa, you blew up overnight. You moved in with Dylan. Dylan became your wife. And you had like a really great little, Dylan was so cute with you, right? And my kids must like so attached to her.
They love Dylan. If she came around more, just kidding.
And everyone during the pandemic went on a journey. Like everyone had their own journey. Yeah, I remember like telling a lot of people, but the one person who was the most vivid in my memory to tell was probably my mother. It was very difficult to tell my mother that. I remember that morning, because I'm usually with an entourage, as I told you, like my family, everyone. I just like an entourage. I'm like a happy bus person, like rather than like being a car alone. So I remember the doctor asked me, oh, you're with no one today. And I was like, yeah. And I remember, I don't know why, but I remember I lied. I remember I told the doctor, my mother's in Florida. I don't know why I lied. I just did. It was like something weird and awkward. The funny part about it was because my mother ended up coming after 45 minutes and she was clearly not in Florida. But calling my mother, I don't know. I haven't heard other people who've been through that talk about like telling their family members. I think that's the most difficult part about being sick, is telling your family members, because you break their hearts and you don't do it on purpose, but the situation breaks their hearts. And calling my mom was like probably the hardest stages of cancer. I never spoke about it and I don't speak about it a lot because I always say like, I didn't want it to define me for some reason. I don't know what that meant. I was like, it's not going to define me. It's not going to change me. It's like my sister, when she first had her child, she was like, I'm the same. I'm not going to change. I'm like, okay. A month later, did you change that? Now she's like, totally different person. But, you know, I didn't want it to define me. So I remember when the doctor first told me, and he first checked my stomach to see my stitches from my surgery. And he then said, you know, come to the room after to talk about it. And as he was checking my stomach, he was like, oh, I've done a lot of Victoria's Secret models. I remember it was like awkward. I was like, why is he telling me that? Because it's awkward. I feel bad for the doctors. I mean, they have to tell patients the truth and they're changing their lives and their fates. And we see that on slow motion. I don't know if I speak for everyone who's been diagnosed with an illness, but for me, there's a lot of grays. But what is clear as yesterday was the morning. I was walking in the hospital and I remember seeing the doctor and he was behind me and he was pretending not to see me. And I remember thinking, oh, he's so unfriendly. And then I went into the room and then he checked my belly and he told me that he did Victoria's Secret models and you can't see the stitches because you really can't. And then he brings me into the room and then all of a sudden the PA comes. Her name I forgot. And then she's staring at the wall and then he starts drawing and he's looking at his drawing. And he's drawing the ovaries, fallopian tube. And I was like, no way. I said to myself, no way. I don't know if I was joking, if I was serious, because I joke all the time. And I said, doc, are you going to tell me I have cancer? Stop drawing. Just tell me. Are you going to tell me I have cancer? And he was like, yes. I was like, wow. And I remember everything word for word. And I said, the dangerous kind? And he said, yes. I said, am I going to need another surgery? And he said, yes. Am I going to be able to have children? He said, I don't know. I said, am I dying? He said, I don't know. And then I said, am I going to have to do chemo? And he said, yes. And I said, the kind that makes your hair fall out? And he said, yes. I was like, oh, wow. And there was a silence. And the PA was like looking not at me. She was young. She was like my age. And I understood that this wasn't something that young women go through quite often. Monica, stop crying. I love you. You cute thing, you. Oh my God, I love you. Sorry, there's just people that you work with that you get to know because you just like work together. Don't cry. It's a happy story, girl. Don't cry. It's a very happy story. It's a happy story because, you know, a lot of people don't sit here with that kind of cancer with their beautiful friends and get to tell the story. And like, it's okay if it defines me because like, I'm a badass. I'm okay being a badass. Excuse my language. I don't know if I'm
supposed
to curse.
No, it's okay. You can say anything you want.
I will never forget what I said next. And it really was something that came out of me because you really learn about yourself later when you look back at it. And I said, it's okay. Because the doctor is like, what is she going to say? And I'm like, it's okay. I said to him, and he was like, okay. And I was like, I'm that girl. He was like, what? I'm like, you don't know me, doc. You don't know me. But I'm that girl. I'm that girl who can go through all this. And like, it's not shocking that this is my journey because I can go through this. He said, okay, the next step is like discussing chemo. They're very like, let's discuss chemo, let's discuss surgery, let's discuss options. I was like, can I call my family? And then I remember calling my mom and it was a month before fashion week. It was 8 a.m. and I called my mother and I said, mom, listen, how did you sleep? And she was like, okay. I'm like, well, I'm at the doctor's and I just want you to come and get dressed. I'll never forget this. They just found a little bit of cancer. Nothing to worry about. It's going to be okay. Just like, I think you should come and get dressed so we can talk about it. And she's like, cancer, like a little bit. I said, just get dressed. We'll come and talk about it. And then she came. She was in the hospital with my whole family and spouse was there within 20 minutes. And the next steps were quite cold. I think a lot of people who have experienced cancer or illness or any autoimmune can say that the doctors are cold. They do it all day. They really do. Do it all day. I don't want to say they become desensitized to it. And definitely was much sadder seeing a young woman. I don't know if it's much sadder seeing a young woman. I think it's sad across the board. It's sad seeing a mother. It's sad seeing a grandmother. It's sad seeing a child. It's sad. Sickness is sad, period. And the rest of it was very cold. There was like chemo 101. And then I realized at that minute who in my family and in my life was going to be part of that journey. And one of my best friends was there. She was hysterical. I love her. But she wasn't there for the first few months of the journey because it was too much. It was too hard on her. My sister was just like amazing. My brother was the best. My man was amazing. He was really, really one of the most beautiful people I can ever express. He was amazing. Really made me feel beautiful, made me feel in control, not scared. It's really important to have good people around you. But you set the tone. You set the tone. You do. It's very much about you setting the tone. I looked at my mother during chemo 101 and her face contorted and she looked maybe like 10 years older at that minute. And there was muscles that were pulling her face down, which is a lot of the work that you do with like muscle work and your face. It's really like it just pulled her face and she looked like a different person. And I said to myself, okay, I looked at my mother and I said, I can't take her on this journey with me. I couldn't take her. It would age her too much. Mm. God forbid it would make her sick, you know?
Right.
And I think that it's a very hard thing for a mother to see is their child sick. I think it's one of the worst things. It's one of your biggest nightmares. Your biggest nightmare is to see your child sick. So I let her go in a really clever way and decided to go through it not with her, which was okay. Didn't make her a bad mom. She's the best. Didn't make her anything less to me except that someone who didn't need to be on that journey with me. I wanted to protect her.
I am pretty much always on this constant quest to calming and easing my nervous system. I've lived most of my life in fight or flight, and I'm in this continuation of adding or subtracting things to my toolbox that help make a massive difference. I've been taking and loving for over 6 months CB distillery oils. I take two that I've noticed a massive difference within myself. One is the sleep tincture. I really love the combination of the CBN and the CBD oil. I find that that combination really calms me into easeful sleep, but not even just like makes me feel tired to go to sleep. I stay asleep, which is the key thing in really giving yourself the rest that you need after running a mile a minute every day like we do. And then in the morning, I take the Calm and Clarity. I take a full dropper full of this. And I will say, on days that I'm feeling a little edgy, I've taken a little bit more and it really helps immediately. I think of these two products as just bringing in this harmony and balance in my system. And we all just need support. And I think it's so important for you to never stop being your own advocate. Try things on, see what works for you. I've tested so many CBD brands and CB distillery oils really, really make a massive difference. You can get 25% off for your first order at cbdistillery.com. Promo code Melissa25, all in caps. And that's cbdistillery.com, code Melissa25. I noticed that about you through just like knowing that you were, it felt like silently going through it because no one really knew. Like you didn't tell a lot of people. There were like very, very few people, but it made me realize something about you that like you're always there and support everyone and always checking in, but like when it came to you, like you can share how that felt, but it felt like you didn't want to put that burden on anyone.
It was the pandemic. Everyone was going through a lot. A lot of people lost a lot of family members. A lot of people were scared and I didn't know what my fate was. There's something that I'd like, I think a lot of people who have cancer, not sure if they share a lot of it, but getting diagnosed with cancer is the first step. Then there's another step of knowing where is it? What stage are you? How long do you have to live? Do you have a chance? Do you not? And there's that time period, which I think is probably the worst part of being diagnosed with cancer. I don't know about other illnesses, but I can definitely tell you the time where you get your biopsy and you get your surgeries, or there's a waiting period where you wait weekend upon weekend. And that Friday when you don't get the answer, you know, you have to wait till Monday. And anyone who has any sick family members or have waited for a doctor to get back to you from Friday to Monday, when you don't get the answer on Friday, it really, really is not fun. And waiting for the answer along the weekend. So I had 2 full weeks of waiting to know, like, did I have a chance? Do I even go through chemo? I mean, and learning that I had a chance, learning what to do with my time those 2 weeks and how to sleep and how to breathe. And the unknown was really, really, like, the waiting period was really intense. So I didn't really want to tell a lot of people because I didn't know what to say. And again, I don't want to break people's hearts. Like, it's kind of sad. Your cheerful friend who, like, loves you and supports you, and your family member and your wife and whatever, you just don't want to break anyone's hearts. You want them happy, people that you love. And when they think that you might not be there, it's very scary. So I didn't tell a lot of people. I was also, like, very, like, hung up about my hair, which was, like, so stupid, because a lot of people will say, a lot of females will say that, like, they're really hung up about their hair, losing it. Some people are, like, really cool. I wasn't. Definitely was not cool. I was very graceful. I have to say, like, if there's qualities in myself that I can say that I definitely own and have the portfolio say I have, I think it was grace. I remember after the whole chemo period and, you know, when it was over, the doctor said to me, I have to tell you something. He said, out of all my patients, you've portrayed the most growth from anyone. I was pretty hysterical after I told him I was the one. Then I became, like, super hysterical, and I went into a phase of, like, hysteria. And I probably buzzed him a little too many times, and it's probably, like, not as sensitive. But then I became very graceful after I was very ungraceful. I became very graceful, and I think I'm a very graceful female, and I think that is something I have the portfolio to say that. Yeah.
That
I'm graceful. I'm a graceful female.
You're a graceful woman.
I went through it pretty great. Thank you. I went through it pretty gracefully. What can you say about yourself? We'll go back to it, but, like, what can you say you have earned the portfolio for being? Let's go back and forth and, like, love each other right now because we deserve it. What can you say, Melissa Wood Health Tepperberg? No. Melissa Wood Tepperberg.
It's okay. I thought you grew up in New York.
No. What can you say that you love, that you have a portfolio and you can say that it's a good quality about yourself and you have the portfolio? You can go 3, 4, 5, like, you don't have to say one thing. You can just can go back and forth.
I think my ability of acceptance, of really accepting myself through all the phases, all the journeys, all the growth, and to still really come out the other end, just, like, loving all of me. And that wasn't always the case.
So sad when I see someone like Melissa saying that, because you're such a beautiful person on the inside and the outside. And I'm not just saying that because I'm one of your closest friends. You really are a beautiful person. You're very nice. You're very kind, very soulful. You know how to apologize. I don't forget that. Like, you apologized to me once and I'll never forget it. It was so genuine and sincere. And I forgave you, like, instantly. And I never even looked back because the way that you apologize is just so sincere. And
I apologize for not being there during this time.
Stop it.
It's true, because I didn't feel, it's a very interesting thing to experience when someone that you love tells you. And I had Chris Carr on and she spoke about her cancer experience and grieving. And I am so comfortable to share how wildly uncomfortable it is for me when people get sick or how to handle loss. And I feel truly through, like, the journey of, like, I'll never forget, we all had dinner and you were telling me about the cap that you were wearing for your hair, which, by the way, also just let me know about the strength that you have within knowing how cold it was.
I want to tell
your head.
I think that's really important. Like, I think that's, like, one of the main reasons I'm here, besides the fact that, like, it's really fun to talk about, like, to talk with you, first of all. It's really fun. But I think one of the most important reasons I'm here is to talk about that whole hair thing, because I don't think a lot of people know about that, you know, that you can actually save your hair when you're going through chemotherapy. I was not the success story, but at the time I thought I was. I had a few hairs like left on my head, and I really like felt I was a success story. I was a medium, like you can have a lot of success. I wasn't. I was okay. I was actually very grateful to have some hair. I think I shared some pictures with you. But I think one of the most traumatizing things about being sick is looking in the mirror and seeing a sick person. And that's just something I didn't want to accept, being sick, because it was the pandemic and we were in a home with family and children. And I didn't want to accept looking in the mirror and seeing, wow, that's chemo, Ronnie. And I used to feel like that in the mirror in the morning. Like sometimes I'd wake up in the morning and I'd look in the mirror and I was just like, oh, who is that? Like, wow, look at your eyebrows and you don't have any. And the way that you see your eyelashes, you don't have any. And like you see your eyes very raw and you see your skin different color. And wow, thank God for makeup. You know what? Because quickly after I would look in the mirror in the morning, I would transform. The most down-to-earth, most like makeup-free person gave me advice right before chemo. One of my photographers, he said to me, Ronnie, I'm going to give you some advice. And I thought he was going to give me like something like, you know, that I was going to take with me, that it was really going to, it was really funny. He said he hates makeup. He hates anything extra. And he said, listen, the second you wake up in the morning, run to the bathroom and put on makeup. That was his advice to me right before I went through chemo. And I thought to myself, what is he saying? Because a lot of people say a lot of weird things. So I didn't really think about it until like, you know, after the second time that I did it, you start looking different and things start falling out. And I was like, wow, okay, he was right. And the second I woke up, I ran to the bathroom with my sister's son. He was the only one up that early. And I would literally paint my face. And I would show up for breakfast with a lot of makeup and nice outfit. And it made me feel better.
Mm-hmm.
It does. A little bit of hair on my head, just enough not to like feel sorry for myself or look at my family looking at me with fear or sorrow and like still feel like an attractive woman. And I have to say, I'm really an attractive woman.
You are.
I am. You know, I never felt attractive before because like you're always like insecure and like my nose or my skin and like whatever. You don't love yourself all the time. But I think that really taught me confidence. And I remember like when I would do treatment, I would tell the nurses, I would tell them, you know, in my real life, I'm a really pretty girl. And they would giggle. I would tell that to the nurses because like I never called myself a pretty woman before.
Mm.
You know? I was like, I recognized that. I was really pretty. I was like, you know what? I don't care if you think I'm pretty. I function as a pretty person. And I wanted the nurses to know that for some reason. And they were cool. And I remember all their names. I never went back to see them, but I remember all their names. So if every one of my nurses, if this comes across one of my nurses, I want them to know how much I appreciate them. One day I'll get the courage to come say hello.
You're not only just beautiful on the outside, you're so stunningly gorgeous on the inside. And that's what everyone sees.
It takes one to know one.
Thank you for sharing.
Anyone who says you're not beautiful has a problem because it's not true. You're one of the most beautiful people. You are.
That's okay. I am finally in a place where I thankfully am not looking to others for validation of self anymore. And it's liberating. You know, I think just...
Well, you've also built this amazing empire. You've done things for yourself. You've shown up for yourself. You've built this incredible platform for yourself. And it's not just business. You're a mother. It's a wife. It's the way you've decided to show up for life. So like, you shouldn't care what people say because you know what? You're trying your best.
I am.
You really are.
We all are, right? I hope.
We try.
Some of us, right? But to be able to identify that in other people, and
we mess up and we pick up and we try again, right?
Yes. Oh, I have to share one story.
Tell me.
That I'll never forget. of you. And then I want to close just asking you one last thing.
You got to talk about you.
No, it's something you said to me. I went to your showroom on Madison Avenue when you were showing at that beautiful space. And I was so upset. And I was like, oh, I just had the worst interview. It was awful. And you go, good. I was like, what? You go, no, it's good. It's good for you to go through those. Like, you can't just be up here all the time.
Yeah, like, you can't just be like loved everywhere you go and like, you know, adored and say the right thing and like be so funny. Like, sometimes you gotta get a beating.
I got beat.
But didn't you learn so much from that?
So much, but you...
So much more than like being, right?
Yes, but what you said to me was also what I needed to hear. I actually didn't need sympathy. I just needed to be like, okay, great. Like, it was tough, right? But like, you made it out the other side. And it was just, I feel like that's just something that we've always shared and why I
love. I hate you had that experience. Like, I hate that someone interviewed you and didn't make you feel good. Uh-huh. And like, a lot of the times...
Not everyone does.
But it's like, you know, maybe it's like a journalist thing. Like, I dabbled in that in school for a minute, a second, actually. And you're taught to be very critical.
Yes.
You know?
And question.
And question. And there's almost a hardness. And I feel like we really need to seek out the softness. And yeah. I think that's why like some people like Oprah, or you, my Mopra, as I call you, I feel like it's really important to be soft with people.
Mm. That's what brings me right to the last question for you is, what does it mean to you to move with your heart?
I feel like it's, for me, it means to connect to my feminine energy. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love my masculine, but like, I'd like to move with my heart, with my feminine energy. Mm. Feminine heart is divine. It's a divine power. So moving with my heart is moving with my feminine energy, moving with compassion, moving with grace, moving with intuition. And if I didn't already say gratitude, with deep gratitude for being able to experience life the way that I am experiencing it.
I'm so grateful for you.
Me
Thank
too.
You so much for sharing your story so gracefully, because I hope it helps anyone else going through this journey or watching a loved one go through it with more hope.
Before we finish, I just want to say thank you. First and foremost. And one more thing about the cold capping, which I think that people are going to probably want to hear about, people who are young. The reality is right now, more young females are getting diagnosed, sadly, with cancer. And a lot of them are young mothers. And a lot of them, hair is important. And there's a lot of ways that you can preserve your hair. I did it through cold capping, a company called Penguin. And what I did was essentially change my cap every 25 minutes. It was a negative 37 degrees. And I sat with that for 11 hours. And I always say that was worse than the chemo, but I would still do it again. Because saving my hair was the only thing I could control in the crazy situation. And it was also something that made me feel less scared to know I was trying my best. And one more thing about cancer, guys, because like, I do really want to say one more really important thing about cancer, which is not like my whole thing in life, but I just want to say that like, I remember vividly the last hair on my arm that fell out, because like, your skin becomes super soft and like, there's no hair on it anywhere. And like, you don't think you have like hair here because you have peach fuzz, but you know when everything falls out that you actually had peach fuzz like here, or like I had peach fuzz in areas that I don't even think I had hair, like in my, you know, excuse me for saying that, but like, you know, you just everywhere on like your neck, on your chest, like you just didn't realize that we have peach fuzz. But anyway, the point of saying that is that there was the last hair on my arm and it was the last one. And I remember that one made me cry when it was gone the next day. And I wrote what's going to be a chapter in my book, was the first chapter, and it was all about me and that last hair. So at first, you don't know what I'm talking about because I'm like talking to this one hair and you don't realize it's a hair, but it at that time was my friend because it's the only hair in my arm left, and praying for it to still be there in the morning so you wouldn't have to be alone. And it was really beautiful. And I read that before coming here today because I wanted to remember what you just said, like, remember where you came from, remember what you saw. And then all of a sudden, when I started saying that to you, because I'm so visual, what I see is I see this beautiful, exotic childhood, and I see death in the waiting rooms for getting treatment, and I see life in delivering my sister's baby a week after it was over, and I see healing by being able to talk about this and share it with others, and hopefully it's going to bring something new. And that's what moving with my heart is, moving in my truth. So I'm sharing the story, and I know that I'm going to make a friend from the story, because this story is going to resonate with someone who wants help saving their hair and wants to like obsess with someone on the phone, or someone who is waiting 2 weeks to get diagnosed, or has a family member, or someone young who shouldn't have this disease, or someone who is not taking care of their health and their stress management or their heart. Because I really want to say that I had a very hard time 3 years prior to getting diagnosed with cancer. And about a month or two before, I literally felt very weak. And the reason I bring this up is because we're on the Melissa Wood Health podcast, and it's important. She says to us quite often to listen to your body. And say what you want, you're preaching the right things. You're teaching us the right things. Listen to your body. Green juice is the truth. It is truly the truth. The nutrients that we have in our organic green juices are better than any vitamins you can take. Movement. Listen to your body. She was a vegan. Now she eats meat. Your body knows. Your body talks to you. And I think being here with you, I think it's really important to tell you, on behalf of me and all of the females that are watching you, thank you. You're teaching us things and you're giving us tools that help us. When I walk with you in a public area, it is like the biggest celebrity friend I've ever had. And it's all these amazing women and females who you've touched, who you've helped, who you've given tools to. And you came out very strong during the pandemic. You came out and you helped a lot of females. And whether or not you were present in the way that you wanted to be, you were present in inspiring me. Because when I was going through that period, I was thinking, wow, Melissa is living her dream. She's teaching people nice things. She's making people really happy. She's being a good citizen of the world. And she's thriving. And it inspired me because I thought, oh, wow, I'm going to get healthy and I'm going to like thrive and it's going to be awesome and I'm going to make my dreams come true. And those are the tools I'm going to remember. So thank you. Thank you on behalf of all those females who like come up to you and tell, I've seen so many say how much you've saved them and how much you taught them. And that's great. It's amazing. It's a very powerful energy to have. And you're showing up for it by bringing your community and your friends here and teaching us that I take the award for talking more than you today.
I love you.
Is that just another lesson? Truly. The one who talks more learns less. Don't do it at home.
I love you so much.
It was so cool. Can we go out for dinner now? And like, can we just have a date?
I hope you enjoyed that episode. We have a special offer for our Move with Heart listeners. When you join MWH as a new member, you will receive an entire month, that's 30 days for free. And this is in addition to our 7-day free trial. All you have to do is head to melissawoodhelp.com and use code MOVEWITHHEART. At MWH,
We believe this practice is not just about building this body you desire. This work is about building a better, stronger relationship with yourself. And that is why we offer everything from movement, meditation, and nutrition to help you not only look, but most importantly, feel your best. Follow me on Instagram at Melissa Wood Tepperberg and MWH at Melissa Wood Health. Tune in for an all new episode next week, and I cannot wait to see you all on the mat.